Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I'm Kate Romero, your host tonight, and I'd like to, excuse me, clear my throat, and thank Testing 1-2. This is live radio, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so I would like to thank Don Newsom over at bbsradio.com for giving us this great platform to raise consciousness using Hollywood, and I have a treat for you tonight, as I do every single Tuesday. I have Robert Madrid, who is an actor, working actor, and a producer. He's also a guardian angel client, as well as somebody who's making a difference to at-risk youth in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and my guess is that it won't stop there. What I'd like to do is just give you a little bit of background about what Robert is up to. The Working Classroom is a not-for-profit organization benefiting at-risk youth in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a multi-ethnic and diverse community of student and professional artists, actors, and writers. The programs offer a unique combination of academic and artistic education and social action. They provide professional development opportunities for talented young artists and actors from historically ignored communities and collaborate to create art for and about our diverse communities. As citizens of a larger global community, they promote peace, tolerance, and respect for human rights at home and abroad. And the goal of the Working Classroom has never changed: to identify drive, ambition, and artistic talent in Albuquerque's forgotten youth, give them skills and support, introduce them to networks of established professionals, and prepare them to succeed in disciplined, high-powered academic and professional environments. And I'd like to, at this time, bring on Robert Madrid. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you betcha. And I just want to tell everybody that they can check out your resume and your demo reel at imdb.com.
Yep.
And just type in Robert Madrid, R-O-B-E-R-T-M-A-D-R-I-D. And it's a great pleasure to have you as a client, Robert, and to have the extra bonus of knowing that you are somebody who is making a difference in the world using the entertainment industry. Is just, you know, it's a thrill for me to know that you're doing that, because you certainly could be using your time to do other things just for yourself without thinking of, you know, how is it benefiting everybody else, and yet here you are making sure that at-risk youth are at least getting your attention and feeling validated and cared about by your energies and your vision. And if you wouldn't mind giving everybody an idea of what inspired you to get involved with that group and to find out what was needed and roll up your sleeves and get down there and just start doing it.
Boy, that's a big, long story, and I can't wait to tell you. And first of all, I'd like to say what a pleasure it is to have you as my manager.
Oh,
I got to tell you, you're very special and amazing, amazing influence on my life now.
Oh, great.
You really are. I've been in Hollywood for over 20 years. I'm actually, as you said, actor, producer, and now, thanks to the Working Classroom in New Mexico, it's inspired me to also become a writer and a director. And I have to say to all the listeners, to anyone who's in the arts, in the entertainment field, the great thing is that everything really is possible. I first got involved with the Working Classroom 12 years ago because I had optioned a script as a producer, a story about Joaquin Murrieta, who's like a bandito from California.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer that I optioned it from, Peter Murrieta, was working in Albuquerque with at-risk youth. And he was a stand-up comedian and a writer. And he asked me, you know, if I would be interested in possibly working. And I said, you know, I would really love to. It's always been, you know, a passion of mine to teach and to help. But at the time, I really didn't know what I was getting into. And I have to say, first, I'll just premise it by saying that by working with these kids, they're all at-risk youth. They're gang kids, drug kids, abused kids, runaway kids, you know, all looking for opportunity in the lower-income areas in Albuquerque. When I first got involved in it, I really didn't know, you know, who they were, what I was getting into. And I know I've worked with a lot of groups. I worked with a group here in Los Angeles called Arts Expand, mm-hmm. which also was gang and underprivileged children.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to New Mexico, it was really an amazing experience. And I'd gone there, and I met with Nanelle Sasser, the director, and she said, you're an actor. Do you do anything else? Is there anything else, you know, we could possibly, you know, start a class with? And I said, well, you know, I've got a lot of stunt experience. I've done stunt stuff, and I've done, you know, stage combat and choreography. And she said, interesting. Well, let's start a stage combat class. Could you do that? And I said, I sure could. I had never done it. I'd never taught stage combat, but I thought, well, I'll just take everything that I've learned and I'll funnel it into the stage combat. And amazingly, what it was most of these kids, the gang kids, were primarily Latino, Native American, African American, Anglo, but basically, you know, children from all areas in the Albuquerque area. And they really took to the stage combat, because you would get students who didn't want to necessarily come to an acting class or a drama class. But when you presented them with the idea of learning how to present a choreographed fight, you know,
right,
and look like they're beating up somebody or getting beaten up,
mm-hmm,
it really turned them on. And through that, we were able to bring in a lot of students and then eventually bring them into their acting program and the art program and the painting program. And they have just a really renowned mural program there where they teach the students painting and murals and whatnot. And the program's just unbelievable, because they've sent three of my students in the past 10 years have just gotten college scholarships.
Wow.
One to the University of Miami and two to DePaul University in the theater program.
Mm.
All through the working classroom, you know. So it's really an amazing opportunity to, like, watch children who may not necessarily be inclined to go into acting or the arts, you know, through the stage combat or through the acting, you know, find a path.
Thrive, yeah. And what you're doing is you're helping them get their balance after a really rough time in life, and showing them that they can have, do, and be anything they choose. And you're mentoring them as a role model. So, you know, you better believe they're watching every move that you make. And I can vouch for what you say about how much the kids love everything about fighting and fight choreography and stunts and all of that. My son, Kalen, who's now 25, when he was 7 years old, actually it was 9 years old, he did a movie called Radio Flyer, and we were on location for 2 months with Richard Donner. And he was one of the co-stars. And Mel Gibson's stunt choreographer, I can't remember his name, taught Kalen and the other boys who were the bullies how to fight. And he loved that.
Yep.
Just loved it. Took to it like a fish to water. And I got a call from the principal after we got back from location a couple of days in a row saying, you have to come and get your son. He's beating up everybody on the playground. He's hitting them so hard in the stomach, their feet are flying off the ground. And I'm like, no, I've got the most placid, peaceful boy on the planet. No way he's beating anybody up. And then I remembered, oh, he's stunt fighting.
Exactly.
So I told her, I said, he learned how to do stunts on the set by Mel Gibson's stunt coordinator, and he's just teaching the kids how to stunt fight. She said, well, it really looks real, and it's too real for me. You come and get him, and I don't want him doing that anymore. And I was just, you know, it was kind of funny, but kind of sad at the same time, because really the kids just were all around him, just loving what he was showing them. And you know, it was a school where there was a little bit of at-risk youth as well. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice though, if somebody would put a program like that in the school so that they can have fun with this energy that feels aggressive in them and do something positive with it.
Right, and it's absolutely true. I mean, in males by nature, you know, their intrinsic nature is to be warriors and to, you know, gather berries and protect their family, but it's just pure fun. I mean, all the fight, and even people ask me as an actor, they're saying, what kind of characters do you like to play? And I go, you know, I play a lot of bad guys, and it's just like the whole idea of, like, fighting and running around, it's just like, you know, for actors, it's all about fantasy anyway, and just, like, to play those kinds of, you know, either heroic or, you know, villainous characters who are active and physical, it really is fun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. How long have you been doing karate and boxing and that sort of thing?
Karate actually started when I was a kid. My dad was a boxer in the Marines, and he taught me. I started boxing probably when I was around 10 or 12,
mm-hmm,
and I started with martial arts when I was 14 or 15.
Mm.
So it's been a while. I've gone through all the phases. You know, I was started with Shotokan karate, which is Japanese style.
Right.
Then I got into kickboxing and did a little taekwondo. And amazingly, most of my friends now are all guys who are, you know, stuntmen and mixed martial arts fighters. And I train three times a week with, you know, a couple fight masters.
Wonderful. And you're a member of the Society of American Fight Directors, correct?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Wonderful. So, you know, I'm personally, as your manager, always looking for things that require stunts and fighting and these kinds of skills, and you've got a really great look. You look extremely scary, and you're such a nice person. Just contrast, contrast, contrast. And it's really important to be able to play all those different roles. And, you know, when, for instance, let me ask you this. When you go into a casting office, Robert, and it's for a thug, a bad guy, you know, like a, just a sociopath murderer,
mm-hmm.
And you've got a real tough look about you. I actually sent your picture out in the promo today.
Good.
The toughest looking one that I had.
Right.
And
I'm half past dead, too.
Yeah. And that gets you a lot of auditions. And I'm just wondering, when you walk in the casting office, does it frighten them, or do you come in as your good-natured self? Do you reveal your heart? Do you walk in character? Do you play around with them and make them nervous on purpose? I mean, what do you do?
For me, the way I was trained, I studied with Sanford Meisner.
Right.
And under Meisner, you know, the premise of the acting is the ability to live truthfully under imaginary circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the fun of being an actor, I basically try to get into the character as soon as I get in the car. You know, I try to take the guy. That way, you know, you can, you know, kind of get comfortable in it and feel it. When I walk into an office, I feel it's important to always be in character. I'm more inclined to want to chit-chat after the audition as to before.
Uh-huh.
You know? So, yeah, I usually walk in. Actually, there's a funny story. I did a film probably about 8 or 9 years ago for Showtime, and it was called Donor Unknown, and it was cast by Melissa Scoff.
Uh-huh.
And I was there to play a coyote, a guy who smuggled people across the border. I was a bad guy, because then Clancy Brown and I cut out their organs and sold them on the black market.
Oh.
And I remember I was in the office waiting to audition. It was in Hollywood, and I was a bad guy, and I was in a black T-shirt and totally in character, and a kind of a offbeat, crazy kind of character walked in off the street in Hollywood and started harassing Melissa Scoff's assistant, saying, I want to be in a movie. What do I have to do? I want to talk to somebody.
Uh-huh.
And I'm standing in the corner getting ready to audition completely in character, and the girl was terrified.
Right.
So I walked up to the guy. I got right in his face, and essentially I told him, you better get out of this office right now.
Uh-huh.
Right now, you're going to deal with me.
Uh-huh.
And it's between you and I now, and I suggest you move. And he stared at me, and he was crazy and trembly, and he backed off and walked out of the office.
Uh-huh.
And when the assistant told Melissa this story of what just happened, she goes, you'll never believe what happened. Robert got rid of this guy.
Uh-huh.
Melissa brought me in to read, and I did the audition, and needless to say, I booked the job.
Wonderful. Yeah, Melissa's great. I'm sure she appreciated that a lot.
Isn't that funny?
It is funny. You know, it's just, you never know what's going to happen anytime you walk out your door, really. Good to be prepared.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did. I worked as a bodyguard for years when I was in college, so that was kind of like a training ground for, because a lot of that is just intimidation. It's like you can avoid a lot of issues if you intimidate. You know?
Absolutely, and it's a good quality to have. And at-risk youth tend to, I mean, from gangs in particular, what they tend to do as part of their modus operandi is to basically intimidate one another, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the real, I mean, as a writer now, and that's one of the great things from this program, I actually wrote a play about 10 years ago called Off the Count, which is basically I wrote it for at-risk youth, and essentially it's a play that I'm now developing into a film, which essentially takes place, the entire film takes place in a millisecond, and it's the moment of a person's death.
Right.
And what happens to you at your death. And essentially what it's all about is the existence of a higher power and attributing for our sins, retribution.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the whole piece so that they would understand that, you know, through their behavior, there will be a moment or a day of reckoning.
Yes.
And that's the thing is that most of these guys, you know, it's most of the at-risk youth, I find that it comes from broken homes or, you know, a lack of parental influence and guidance, and then they'll go to the gangs, they'll go to the, you know, these environments in order to get that kind of nurturing or fathering that they're missing. And a lot of it, that's what it is. It's you know, it's the machismo, and it's the, you know, the pride of their gangs and their neighborhoods and stuff. But still, it turns deadly, and it's a path, you know, to nowhere.
Absolutely, as we know. So your influence with the at-risk youth in this working classroom project gives them a chance to tap into and utilize their emotions that basically were frozen previously due to their circumstances and their environment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that gives them a safe place to express themselves and a healthy way to figure out what it is they're feeling in the first place.
It gives them an outlet in a way. Yeah, exactly. Like you said, it's a form of expression that is nonviolent, you know, and as an artist, you know, anytime that expression, you know, you can, you know, basically express yourself in a positive way, it's going to enrich your life, and it's going to cause you to grow.
Yes, right. And I just think it's great that somebody is taking the time, a lot of people are taking the time, and I just love hearing about it, where theater is being used to help people who didn't know that there was any way out of their circumstances. And I believe that with the working classroom, you've had some celebrities go down there, like the acclaimed playwright Moises Kaufman.
Yes, absolutely.
And Ann Kuzak.
Yep.
And Gregory Cotes.
Yep.
And the Haitian sculptor Edouard Duval Carey.
Yes.
Is it Edouard?
Eduardo. We call him Eduardo. Edouard.
Okay, yeah. Edouard. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And also these youth are doing artwork that is being exhibited and collected by museums all over the U.S. and abroad, correct?
Correct.
Great. That's wonderful. And they're doing murals?
They're doing murals. They're phenomenal muralists. I mean, Albuquerque is littered with these, like, intense, like, sides of walls, murals documenting, like, the basically, you know, the plight of the indigenous people of the Albuquerque area, and also showing, there's one large mural that's on the working classroom that's on the side that shows basically, you know, kind of like the evolution of the Aztlan, the Aztecs, all the way to modern day man.
Oh, that's fantastic. And is there some, they make good use of graffiti in these murals?
Well, you know what? It's like, They're muralesque, but there is no graffiti really. And in Albuquerque, it's a little different environment. There's different neighborhoods than there are in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see as much graffiti there. There's a huge amount of respect for these murals and these art pieces.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And about 95% of these students in the working classroom graduate from high school?
Yes.
That's a great percentage.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, and they have an unbelievable tutoring program. I was just there a couple months ago putting up a play, and I remember when I would come in for rehearsals, I would always be amazed at all. They just had, you know, like 30 tutors working with children in the tutoring section, all helping them with all levels and subjects, you know, in school. And they're all volunteer, and it's just like, it's really inspirational to see so many people helping other people.
Right, and they continue their studies after graduation. Some of them have gone on to the Art Institute of Chicago and Pitzer College, University of Miami and Reed College, and even the Institute of American Indian Arts.
Mm-hmm. And most recently, too, to DePaul University.
Wonderful.
In Chicago, yeah, and they're both in the theater program.
And can you imagine them actually having this opportunity had they not been involved with the working classroom?
No. Unbelievable.
Their self-esteem must just be off the charts, that they can find something that they're good at, something they can resonate with, and something that can take them to where they want to go in life and give them a sense of purpose. That's awesome that's available. So I want to, with that segue, ask you, what is the requirement of accepting an at-risk youth into this program? What do they need to do? What are their qualifications?
That is up to the director again, Nan L. Sasser.
Mm-hmm.
That would be her department. But the one thing that I can say is that the one thing they do instill is a huge amount of discipline and respect for each other. So one of the criteria I know that they're looking for at-risk youth to gain admittance is a dedicated student. A dedicated student, a good person, a giving person, someone who shares, gives of themselves, non-judgmental. They don't tolerate any kind of, racism or sexism in any way. they're really stressed to be on time and be responsible for their environment. It really is a unique, you know, a unique situation.
That's great. And is there like a three-strike rule where if they blow it three times, they have to leave the program?
Absolutely. There is a rule. I don't know if it's, they call it three strikes. But I know a lot of times when we were doing the play, when we did the production, we just did the hole in the wall. They had a unique a penalty system, which is if you're late for either a rehearsal, a dress rehearsal, or a performance, for the rehearsal, it is $1 a minute for every minute that you're late.
Uh-huh.
And I think for the dress rehearsal and performance, I think it's $2 a minute,
mm-hmm.
and then at a certain point, you'll be dismissed.
Right. Well, if you don't show up for the performance, that's not a good thing.
Right. And see, and the thing to remember, too, is that those monies, they are paid. All the actors, that's one of the things that the working classroom insists on, is that when they give a performance, every actor is paid.
That's terrific.
Yeah, so each of the actors, we had 10 members of the cast, they each were paid $100, and then if they were late, that money was deducted from that fee.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a great way to recycle the funds.
Yeah, exactly.
And other people's tardiness.
And I think it's great, too, just to pay people, because then they get a worth for their time and their work.
Yeah. When you make even $1 as an actor, you become a professional in that moment.
Exactly.
Yep, that's great. What a wonderful concept. So what kind of exposure are you getting for this program in the entertainment industry? How do you bring celebrities down there? What is it that you need? Is there anything that you could say to our listeners right now to reach out for some support for this program?
I'm just drinking water, sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, in terms of the program, anyone who wants to get involved, I mean, the way I got involved was, you know, through a friend and a referral. I'd be happy to refer anyone who's interested. Primarily what they're looking for is bilingual artists,
mm-hmm.
because most of the population is Spanish-speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very happy to find bilingual artists, ethnic artists. They're looking for people, you know, in the arts that do, you know, painting, sculpture,
mm-hmm.
Muralists. They just bought a brand new facility in Albuquerque, and it's an old tortilla factory.
Mm. Great.
So they bought this large tortilla factory, and I believe they acquired it in March, and
mm-hmm.
so now they're busy remodeling it. So there they're going to have a theater and a rehearsal space and an office complex. So fortunately, the program is expanding. And essentially, it would be anyone who's, you know, has an interest for at-risk youth, has something to offer, and then it would depend on the working classroom as to, you know, they have a summer seminar where that's when I started. I would go every summer and teach either 1 week or 2 weeks. I would usually, you know, double up and teach a stage combat class in the morning and an acting class in the afternoon.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, so they have this summer, I believe it's the summer workshop, they call it, summer workshop
mm-hmm.
seminar, and that would be a great place to start.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on, you know, what kind of talents someone had to offer, Nan would be coordinate that, and then she would inject them into the summer program.
Right, and so how does the program get funded? I know it's not for profit.
Right, I believe it's funded through grants
mm-hmm.
through several foundations in New Mexico.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, I have some actors who are bilingual. I just wonder if they'd like to get involved with that.
Absolutely. You know,
they're doing they're all doing the same play right now. As a matter of fact.
Oh, which play is that?
What is the name of it? I have to grab a resume to tell you. It's a really great play, and I picked up a few actors out of that play, as a matter of fact. It's
wonderful.
Called You Don't Know Me by Jovita Dominguez.
Nice.
At Casa 0101 Productions. And it's really good, and it's all about at-risk people, and the mother is a crackhead, and you know, and the daughter's selling herself, and then she's a lesbian, and she's confused, and it's just really, really interesting, and they do it, the theater's in, like, in a barrio.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Yeah, and afterwards we went down to the neighborhood bar and had some fake tequila. It was really fun. There's some transgender people singing in their sequins with the disco ball. It was really fun.
That's fun. What part of the city?
It was I don't know exactly, like East LA or some, just way downtown.
Yeah,
took a long time to get there.
Downtown or East LA. Yeah.
I was a passenger. I did not drive, so I was. So what do you see possible out of the working classroom? Do you see it growing into something else?
Yes, I do. And the thing that's interesting is that now, as a result of this, you know, through the working classroom, you know, I've become a writer and I directed the play and then, you know, produced and acting. And now I actually have three projects as a producer that I'm setting up in New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
I just introduced Nan El Sasso, the director of the working class room, to a woman, Eleanor Bravo, in New Mexico, who's a casting director and a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And Nat, they're now trying to affiliate with the working classroom to set up a young independent filmmakers project.
Oh, wonderful.
So, I mean, that's the potential, is that there's so much production now in New Mexico. Albuquerque, you know, they had any number of you know, feature films. I think they had like 6 or 7 feature films made in Albuquerque last year. They had 2 television series in plain sight. And, you know, now that the movie industry has found New Mexico, I see that a lot of huge potential for the working classroom, because they do have artists who could be set designers. You know, they have a lot of craftsmen and painters, mm-hmm. and they have a really talented acting ensemble there.
And that would be great training also to be on a set and contribute to that kind of an industry. And, you know, a lot of people just start as extras on a set and end up being like mega stars.
Absolutely.
So yeah. It's a wonderful growth opportunity to even be involved in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, when I started, I wanted to be a stunt man, and everybody told me, if you want to be a stunt guy, be an extra. Because from being an extra, they might take you as a stand-in or a photo double, or
mm-hmm.
you meet the stunt coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I encourage everybody to try everything, because just being on the set and being close to it, that's where things happen. And that's my dream, because most of the films that I've made have been in Russia. The last 4 projects we've done have been in Russia, but now I'm getting ready to do one here in Los Angeles. So I'm going to try and use as many people as I can in L.A., but then the next project for the end of the year is slated for New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
so that's where I really might be able to use some of the students there, you know, and inject them into the filmmaking system.
That's wonderful. I'm sure they'll appreciate that a lot, as will their families.
Yeah, they'd love it. And actually, I mean, several of the of my students from the working classroom have worked professionally. One actor, Jesus Mayorga, I know worked on the film Alamo, and several, at least probably 6 have done booked local commercials in Albuquerque.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So does the industry know that they can go to the working classroom to find some talent?
Yes, they do. Some do and some don't. That's probably going to be always an ongoing process, as you know, as a manager, of constantly
mm-hmm.
alerting producers that your talent is able and willing to work.
Yeah.
But I know Nan and I, you know, we've done, you know, she's been very aggressive, and I've helped her as much as I can. And we're, when a production's coming into town, to try and, you know, alert them and make them seen. And then through my years there, because now as a producer, I was there probably 5 times last year, I've been able to meet a lot of the casting personnel. And so when they come to me with casting needs, the first place I'll refer them is to the working classroom.
That's terrific. That's really great. And what is the play that you put up in the working classroom that has to, like, a theme of the Wizard of Oz? Or what was the name of that one?
It's called The Hole in the Wall.
That was The Hole in the Wall.
That's
wow, what a great
wall.
Premise. Would you mind telling us, our listeners, your premise and how you thought of that?
Sure. Actually, it was funny because Nan had come to me, and usually, like I said, I usually go for the summer program. So I'll go for 2 weeks, and I'll teach them acting and stage combat in a 2-week period.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the 2 weeks, you know, all actors want to act. They want to get up and perform and show what they've learned. So then usually what I would do is teach rigorously for the first week, and then the second week I would start thinking about casting, and then in 3 days I would write a 10-minute piece, and then we'd put it up on Friday for the, you know, the families and the friends and the foundation, you know, members of the working classroom. And so that was kind of our process for 5 or 6 years, was to always do this, a 10-minute piece at the end of the class.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nan thought last year, she said, well, you know what, if we get the funding, maybe we could do, you know, something and mount it in a theater setting, you know, so we could have lights and makeup and costumes and a stage manager and sets and the whole deal. And I said, oh, that would be awesome. And she goes, would you mind writing a piece, you know, that would be at least 30 or 40 minutes? And I said to her, great, absolutely. I go, oh, what should we do it on? Do you have a theme or a premise? And she said, well, the kids love the stage combat, and the audience loves watching the kids do the stage combat. She goes, your pieces are always funny, because when you have to do a 10-minute piece in the summer program, I find it's best to make it funny, you know, because you throw in some comedy, it's very entertaining. So she goes, so let's make it funny. She goes, and can you do it about immigration?
Mm.
And I go, so you want me to do a play about immigration utilizing stage combat and make it funny? And I was like, okay. And it was a really interesting challenge. And so I thought to myself, well, we don't have a lot of time. So what I needed to do was come up with archetypical characters that people could identify immediately. So I thought, okay, what's the most identifiable, you know, characters, you know, cinematically? And then I just thought, you know, it's about immigration. The premise of The Wizard of Oz applies perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially I wrote this piece. It's called The Hole in the Wall, and it's about a young girl in Chiapas, Mexico, down in the interior of Mexico, who has a dream of coming to America. She wants to come to America, but she doesn't know how to get there. So she hires a coyote named Toto.
Right.
Okay, so Toto's her coyote, and they're going to come up and travel to Mexico. What she doesn't realize is that the Americans now have built this 35-foot wall between Mexico and America. So the coyote isn't even aware of it, but it's much more difficult to get back, get into America now than it ever has been. Not only that, there's three villains that are watching them, unbeknownst to them. But there's three villains watching, and they're using a satellite telescope to monitor Dorothy's progress, because they realize that she's very persistent, and she's brave and courageous, and she has a lot of attributes. And she will stop at nothing to get to America and make her dream come true. So with the use of the satellite, our three villains are Condoleezza, Condoleezza, Dick, and George.
Uh-huh.
And what they have plans of doing is allowing this girl to get to the wall, and then when she crosses, they're basically going to harvest her body parts.
Oh.
Because, yeah, exactly, because she has so many great attributes.
Mm-hmm.
So Condoleezza wants to catch her and take her courage.
Uh-huh.
Dick wants to catch her and take her heart.
Uh-huh.
Because, as he says in the play, I need that young, healthy heart.
Yeah.
And then George wants to catch her and take her brain. So that was the spine of the piece. And needless to say, there was a lot of jokes and a lot of action, because we had George, Dick, and Condoleezza, and then they had their Secret Service agents. We had all these little soldiers, you know, these little 4-foot-tall Secret Service agents in blue blazers and sunglasses running around. And actually, you know, there was a lot of messages in the piece about immigration, because the opening of the piece was very violent. It was basically a bunch of immigrants, 8 immigrants, who actually infiltrate the audience. They actually went into the stage of the audience during the play, begging for help and refuge, and then they were apprehended by the Border Patrol. And there's a huge battle scene that very powerful when it started. And essentially, you know, and that's the story, but that was the Wizard of Oz, you know, archetype.
Well, how did that go over? You turned it into a 40-minute play?
Yeah, we turned it into a 40-minute play.
Uh-huh.
We showed it at a theater, a great theater in New Mexico. It's called the, let's see, what was the name of the theater? It's called the End, oh, yeah, here it is. I can never remember it. The N4th Theater, and it was on 4th Street in downtown Albuquerque, and it was about a 100-seat theater with a huge lighting grid and a huge floor space, and I think we sold out 75% of the time.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
How long did it run?
It ran for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Weekends.
And the cast was everyone from the working classroom?
Everybody from the working classroom.
That's great. And did their families all come?
Everybody's family came, yeah. Tons of families, tons of supporters. It was really fun because of the 10 cast members, 5 had never been on stage before.
Wow.
So we had 5 actors who had some experience and 5 actors who had no experience.
So you got to watch them grow up during that performance.
Yeah, really quick.
Yeah.
And let me tell them, opening night, that's the most amazing, one of the most amazing experiences, and that, again, one of the most rewarding things about working with young actors like that is experiencing, it's their level of discovery, experiencing all the things that we've discovered as actors, you
mm-hmm.
know, the excitement of,
mm-hmm.
like, going up on stage and opening night jitters and makeup mm-hmm. and costumes and, like, lights and cues and responsibility and remembering your lines, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it really is exciting when you watch them because these students on opening night was a little rough because we had so many lights that doing all the technical rehearsal stuff was much more consuming than I'd expected.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent a lot of time doing a lot of light cue rehearsals and things. Mm-hmm. And so the opening night probably could have been a little more polished because they should have had another, you know, an additional dress rehearsal, but we never got to it.
Right.
So essentially opening night was kind of our full dress. And they, you know, I could just see it in their eyes. They're like, oh, my God, you know, we're doing this thing. But
right.
The difference between opening night and the second performance, they grew tremendously. Yeah, I mean,
so everybody showed up and no one had to pay $2, right?
Nobody had to pay
$2. Okay,
yeah.
That's good. So by the time the 3 weeks were up, did the 5 newcomers say when we're going to do the next one?
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's exactly what Nan said. She goes, oh, we got to get you back here, you
mm-hmm.
know, because, and that's the thing, I mean, as long as my schedule allows, I mean, I'm really eager, you know, I'd love to go back, but, you know, there's this whole reality of making a living in L.A.
Yeah.
And, they're ready for the next one.
That's terrific. Well, it's nice that you can dedicate some time to all of that. So this movie that you're producing, you're co-producing right now?
Executive producer.
Executive producer. And what's the name of that one? Can you say?
Well, you know, the working title of it is called Magic Man.
Magic Man.
Uh-huh.
And can you say a little bit about the premise or the role you play in it? Or?
The premise right now, essentially, I mean, it may go through rewrites, but right now the premise is about a magician who is like kind of maybe a Chris Angel, David Blaine kind of, you know, cutting-edge magician who's a master of disappearing
mm-hmm.
and weapons and knives and illusion. And he's a magician who's, like, you know, very noted and highly recognized, but he's also a sociopathic mass murderer.
Ew.
I know, creepy. Right. So he brings a lot of his, you know, volunteers from the audience up on stage, performs magic, makes them disappear, makes them reappear, and then afterwards he stalks them and murders them.
Whoa.
Right. But because he's such a master of illusion, the police, the CSI, they've got nothing on this guy. And he's very, you know, egocentric and flamboyant, and basically by the end of the film he's putting it in their face and they still can't catch him.
Mm.
So there's a young heroine who's in the film, and she has known him since she was a child, and her mother actually met an ill fate when the girl was about 12 years old, and she starts to put the pieces of the puzzle together
mm-hmm.
and realizes that he was responsible. So the heroine is the one, she's now 25, she ends up bringing him to justice.
Well, girl power.
Girl power is right.
That's right. So
yeah.
So which role do you play, the Magic Man?
No, the Magic Man, we're still in the casting phases of this right now.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to put offers out to people for 3 different roles, and then depending on how our cast goes, I'll decide accordingly.
Okay, so you'll fill in whatever.
Yeah. Essentially, if whatever we don't get a star for, I will. Yeah.
Well, you're a star.
Oh, thank you. That's sweet.
Welcome. And the executive producer credit is not too bad either.
No, it's not too bad at all.
Yeah. Is that the first time you'll be executive producing?
No, that'll be my second. I just executive produced a film that actually just premiered in Moscow about 2 weeks ago, and
mm-hmm.
it's called Treasure Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
And I was executive producer on that, and that stars David Carradine and Sherilyn Fenn and Alexander Nevsky and Stephen Brand and William Shockley and myself.
Yeah, you starred in that also.
I starred in that one as well. Yeah.
What role did you play in Treasure Raiders?
In Treasure Raiders, I play Dr. Pablo Ramirez. And I play actually the best friend to Stephen Brand, who's an American history teacher teaching in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a cross between The Fast and the Furious and National Treasure.
Mm.
And he's a treasure-seeking history teacher in Moscow whose hobby and passion is racing his Porsche through the streets of Moscow with all the street racing gangs.
Mm.
So he basically enlists the help of one of the racer is Alexander Nevsky, and they go on a quest to find hidden treasure in Moscow.
Hmm.
So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of action. And I play his best friend, who's actually a doctor from Colombia, who turns out to be a bad, bad guy at the end.
Right.
Yeah, so it's really fun.
Cool. Well, now that you're doing some executive producing and sort of got yourself in enough to create your own projects, I sense that you will be from the ground up creating your own projects eventually.
That's what I'm doing now, yeah.
Yeah, if you were to create a film that would just raise consciousness for every person who watched it, what would the premise be?
Well, I'm actually writing. It's funny, I just had a pitch meeting last week with a producer, and we talked about this film. And like I mentioned, Off the Count is a film that's very close to me because it has to do with helping young children. But there's another project that I'm actually writing right now, which is called the Palenque Project. And it's essentially about two anthropologists who go to Palenque in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And they research the disappearance of the Mayans. And the Mayans are the only civilization, I think, to have ever disappeared off the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what they do is they go there, and I guess the best way to pitch this movie is it's a metaphysical action-adventure film. And yeah, and as they go to Palenque, what they realize is that there's a lot of questions that need to be answered as to much more than on the surface of where the Mayans went. And it deals with the existence of a higher power. Do we reincarnate?
Mm-hmm.
And why are we here?
Right.
And I would say each one of my three central characters is two anthropologists and a policeman who was wounded on the job, almost killed by a 13-year-old gangbanger. So he goes down to Palenque to do rehabilitation and hang out with his old friend from UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially each of those three characters has one of those topics as their theme, you know, as their central premise in the film. And I guess that's my question, which is something that I probably ask myself on a daily basis, and that is, why are we here? What is our mission?
Why are we here, Robert?
You know, it's so simple and yet so complex.
Uh-huh.
Why are we here? I think if I had to define it as I am now, I don't know exactly, like, I can give you a theoretical version, which is I think we're here to create love, to manifest the God's love and share it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel that we're all created in the image and likeness of God,
mm-hmm.
and that our greatest calling is probably to, you know, to generate that,
mm-hmm.
to create love. In terms of my mission, that's something that I'm always looking for, because I'm trying to find out, what can I do? How can I best fulfill that?
Right. And if you knew the answer to that, what would it be? Just trust me.
Well, if I could do it my way, and I'm not, you know, if I could, I would want to make films that would reach hundreds of thousands or possibly millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
That would raise their consciousness,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, I would end war.
Yeah.
I would end starvation.
Yeah.
I would end famine.
Mm-hmm.
I would end prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would end racism.
Mm-hmm.
I would ideally create a huge global community of God-loving and people-loving individuals.
Right, and my greatest desire is to make the world a safe place to be so that people will stop hurting each other by revealing the God that we all are to each other. Because, you know, if we realize the God that we are, the gangbanger will not pick up a gun and shoot another person who he's seeing God in. It just wouldn't happen.
Right.
And so if there was one thing that we could focus on, and you put it so well, is to bring out the God in each other. And that's what I aspire to do with everything that I'm doing in life right now,
that's
is
wonderful.
To help people to get back to their divinity so that they'll recognize, recognize, remember who they are, and in so doing behave quite differently. When they look in the mirror, they see who they really are, and they go out in the world being that person. And I believe that as long as we are being the change we want to see in the world, that eventually, as we model that in our own communities, in our families, and for ourselves, that it will catch on. And I believe it does take just one person to ignite consciousness in the world. I believe one person can.
Yeah, that they really can. And I think for me, that's one of the most exciting things about the entertainment business, is incredibly tough, very competitive, you know, all kinds of obstacles. But the potential, like you said, for one person to reach masses is there. It's absolutely, and you look at filmmakers, you know, I look at filmmakers, you know, like Steven Spielberg, who's done some profound work and, you know, and reached millions and millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, it's possible, you know.
Yeah, Jurassic Park, if they could just throw some metaphysics in there, that would...
Yeah, I love it.
That would be really great.
Stock footage from... between Jurassic Park and Apocalypto and The Ruins, I was thinking, yeah, I can actually make my movie from their outtakes. You know?
Well, I'll bet you could. That would be an interesting thing to do.
Yeah, and look what Mel Gibson did, you know, with The Passion of the Christ. I mean, just,
right.
You know, it's the power of one man, but in Hollywood it has to be one very powerful man, you know, or one rich man.
Or just one person with a really big vision.
That's true. Or one person with a really big vision who attains enough, you know, like we said, clout and power to fulfill his dream.
Well, I'm just going to be all Pollyanna here and say the clout and power is realizing who they are, like, no kidding, and believing in and acting on the unseen. And I believe that with passion and purpose behind it can cause all kinds of things to happen that no one expected. I've seen so many miracles in my own life, and I am a miracle.
You are a miracle.
Yeah, I totally am, and I know it, and I'm very grateful and thankful for that. And I wouldn't trade anything along my journey, as painful as it was, because it carved me into a person who wants to be the one person who ignites consciousness on the planet. And if every one of us would feel that way for 15 minutes in our lifetime, it would be a different world tomorrow. Guaranteed.
Isn't that the truth? It's beautiful.
Guaranteed.
It's true.
Just would just aspire to be that one person who ignites consciousness on the planet. Just aspire to be that for 15 minutes. Just meditate on that for 15 minutes. And that would be such a consciousness shift. Collective consciousness would do a complete flip,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And and there's you know, everything is energy. Everything is energy. So who says that what you think about, you don't bring about? I believe you certainly do.
Yeah.
So, you know, once we get thought-provoking films out there that really are causing people to question how they've perceived reality before they saw that film, you know, to shift their reality and shift their perception, to start including everybody and to see that we are really all one, and it's not just me against you, it's we. It's not you and me, it's we. Now it's we.
Right.
And the more that we realize that and, you know, be mindful of that, the better it is. And, of course, you know, it's also very prudent to protect yourself along the way and do your best not to have to associate with toxic people, but at the same time to energetically send them love. It's like one of the hardest things I ever did was visualize the one person that I have the biggest issue with in my life, and for 5 minutes send that person love and wish them all the great things that I would wish for myself.
Hmm.
And when I did that, I just started crying like a baby, because the love that I felt and the God that I felt when I did that in that moment was overwhelming and scary because it was so powerful to do something like that.
Wow, that's really beautiful and really powerful. And yeah, and that's what we all need to do.
Yeah, but it just takes some courage to get to a place where you want to put down your axe that you're grinding and just, you know, pick up a mirror and take a look at who are you really. When you look in your own eyes, you can't help but see it if you really look. And one thing that I did along my journey a few years ago was I made sure that I looked in the mirror at least 5 minutes at a time every single day and looked in the mirror into my own eyes until I cried. And
wow.
I would do it every single day. It was an exercise.
Wow.
Yeah, it penetrated that armor that I had built around myself so that I could then go to work on, you know, really bringing out the God that I am slowly but surely. And, you know, it was my own process. I didn't go to anybody to ask some guru how to do that. I just started doing that. And there really is nowhere to get. You can start right where you are this very minute and change your life forever and those around you just by shifting your perception and just change your system.
Mm-hmm.
Just change your system. You know, there's a gazillion great books out there that'll lead the way, and lots of great movies. I haven't seen The Moses Code yet, but I know that it's supposed to be a really good film that's just been released.
Yeah, I heard good things about it. I haven't seen it either.
Right, and great filmmakers out there doing things like that. And if I were you, Robert, I would check out Mickey Willis,
okay,
who does the Elevate Film Festival, and Drew Harriet is the director of The Secret. And they have teamed up together, and
oh,
they're doing
wow.
things, and they just put together the Moses Code.
Oh, okay. We got to talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Just mickeywillis.com.
Okay.
And it's mickeiwillis.com.
Okay.
And introduce yourself to him and tell him I sent you.
Okay.
Because he's just building a gigantic conglomerate film production company with all kinds of different departments in it where a director and a filmmaker can walk in. And he'll assign a crew to them, and they'll go out and make their film. So
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's all consciousness-raising. He's the person who put together the Elevate Film Festival, and that's where people start from nothing. I mean, not even they might have a concept in their mind, but they start from nothing. No film crew, no script, nothing. And when he blows the whistle or fires the gun and says, go, they have exactly 48 hours
to
finish a film in its entirety, which is consciousness raising and uplifting and enriching. And I was a judge on a panel for one of their festivals, and what I saw there really changed my life. It really showed me that it doesn't need to take forever, and you don't need to have all this money. You don't need to have, you know, a great team or be a powerful person in Los Angeles. You can just say you can have the desire in your heart, your concept, and a purpose and a passion, and just ask everybody for help.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you have your finished product.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's really no excuse for not being out there doing that.
Right.
And the Mickey Willis is a person who's a great pioneer in showing people that you can have, do, and be anything you choose, and you could do it right now, and you can start with nothing and look around in 5 minutes. You've got, like, incredible things, and you blow your own mind.
Wow, that's really brilliant. Because
yeah.
That was, like, my next question I was going to ask. Is it my biggest question, you know, like I said, my experience with all the roles I've played and stuff like that is just the constant battle between, you know, the commercial requirements for a film and then your need to put in artistic, you know, I mean, or spiritual message, you know, in content.
Yeah.
And, but like you said, I mean, there's no excuse not to do it. Just
well,
do
there's
it.
Ways. Yeah, and there's, and I'm finding for myself, because I'm a progressive talent manager with a focus on consciousness, that there's a whole lot of people out there who are out of the consciousness closet, out loud and proud like I am, who are just looking for things to do. And there's YouTube. You can make little films and post them on YouTube, and all kinds of things are happening from that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people are being inspired all over the place, and it's like there's all, you know, if you have a desire, a purpose, and a passion, there's nothing you can't do. Nothing. And it's just getting to that place where you believe in yourself enough, believing in and acting on the unseen, which is what I call faith.
Yeah, it really
so,
is.
Yeah, so we're coming up on the end of our Spiritual Hollywood Hour, and if you had 30 seconds to say whatever is in your heart right now and trust yourself to say that to our listeners, what would that be, Robert?
Wow. I would just say thank you, Katie. Thank you all for listening. send me positive energy and prayers. I sincerely want to eventually make a film that will help change the consciousness of mankind and war, poverty, and hunger.
Wonderful. Excellent. And so be it. So it is. I say it's done. With that, I will invite everybody to take a deep breath, stand up really straight, and love yourselves. And remember, the last six letters of attraction are action. So create the life that you love starting right now. Thank you, Robert, for being on the show, and we'll see everybody next week. Good night. Thanks.